Page 100 of The Unfolding is the story of Gary LaVox and you.
I was just at my mom's house, listening to the radio. I just immediately looked up and said, "Father, I'm so sorry. I know that you've given me a gift, and I'm just so sorry that I haven't used it." I don't even know where the words came from. It was just like, "I'm going to Nashville."
God's story has been unfolding
since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. Welcome to the 100th episode of The Unfolding Podcast. We're going to celebrate with a special edition of the show, and we thought one of the best ways we could do that would be, of course, to tell stories, including some of your stories of how God has used The Unfolding in your life. But first, we're going to start with a story about a guy in his kitchen who hears from God, and now you hear that guy on the radio. Gary LaVox grew up in a family full of faith. His grandmother in particular really helped form a faith that's lasted throughout his life. But he didn't grow up thinking, hey, one day I'm going to be a part of one of the most successful country bands of all time. Rascal Flatts is the most awarded country group of the past decade. 17 number one hits, millions of albums sold, billions of online streams, 11 million concert tickets sold, just on and on. But there was a time when Gary LaVox didn't realize his voice was a gift and God wanted him to use it. Hey, thanks for joining me today. I'm really grateful.
Well, you know what? I'm grateful for you to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'd love to hear the story about that day in your mom's kitchen. I've heard you say many, many times you have referred to what you've done musically as a call and that God clearly gave you the gift, and you've often referred to that day. And I'd love to hear that story. But before I hear that one, I'd love to hear a little backstory if you're okay with that.
Okay.
Because in order to hear God's voice that day, I'm assuming you had some history with God where you either learned to recognize his voice or there were some people around you or helping you, like even have that expectation. Because a lot of people wouldn't know, wouldn't recognize if God was talking to them. I'm curious what faith was like growing up for you and how you learned to recognize when God was talking to you.
Okay, so here's the backstory. So thank goodness that I had an amazing family that laid the foundation. So I grew up a Pentecostal Church of God kid, a Pentecostal kid. So I grew up in the church and had an amazing foundation with my grandmother. And I mean, just, you know, it was Wednesday, you know, every Wednesday, twice on Sundays. And then, you know, Sunday at like, you know, like when 10 minutes before you're getting ready to go, and all of a sudden here comes Sister Bragg, and I'd go, "Oh no, she's going to speak in tongues. There ain't no way I'm getting out of here. There is no way." Because then by the time the interpretation comes, it's going to be, I'm going to have enough time to eat. And then grandma's going to drag me back in here, give me a piece of juicy fruit, and then and tell me to hold her Kleenexes. And I'll be in here again until 9:30. So you know what I'm talking about.
It was an all day thing. All day.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would be right to the end. And I just go, "Oh Lord, this is it. I'm going to get to watch football." And Sister Bragg would just stand up or somebody in there. And I'd go, "Oh, well, nope, not today.
Might as well get comfortable."
Nope. Yeah. I'm going to lay down at this point. So, yeah. So that's where it all started. You know, I just grew up with an amazing family that laid the foundation for me. And you know, I always, even if I didn't know what I was doing at 7 or 8, I knew who God was and I knew who Jesus was. And I knew, because a lot of times you don't, you know, at that age, I don't know if you really know, but you repeat a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So you're almost speaking into existence, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where it started for me. So I just, through my life growing up, you know, as I grew, my faith grew, and I recognized when, okay, because I'd go through situations like, you know, in life, just regular everyday stuff that you sit there and you question and you're just like, "Oh, what?" And then all of a sudden I'm just so grateful that I always reverted back to, you know, instead of just asking everyone around me, I knew who to ask. And I'd say, "Lord, you know, help, what is going on? Help me to understand what's happening here. You know, just like even little stuff like graduating high school. It's like, okay, I hated government, but I got to pass government to do it. So I'm like, Lord, I can't do it without you. So, you know, I mean, even the littlest things, I would just always call on his name. So I'm like, look, I will get a cheat sheet and I want to need you to stop me from doing that. So I need for you to help give me some vision on these answers here.
When you think about those growing up years, was there a time when you look back on and you realize that faith really became your own?
Yeah. You know, and I'll tell you, it's because I struggled with it for a long time. So my grandmother, who I told you about, I just loved her. I mean, she was my everything. She was just, you know, the staple and the anchor for everybody in our family, you know. And when she got cancer, you know, it went in remission. And then when it came back, it just came back with a vengeance. So I really struggled, you know, with God. I really did. I was just, my prayer would always be, Lord, please just take her home. Because it would go year after year. It's such a demoralizing, inhumane disease. At that point, it's like, you know, you go from a 200 some pound, you know, West Virginia coal miner wife to, you know, 79 pounds and you're picking her up and taking her to the bathroom. So I just couldn't understand. And I was just like, Lord, please take her home. A lady that does nothing but serve her whole entire life for you. And it just like, and I remember just struggling with that so hard. And then on her deathbed and her sickness, she said, baby, listen, if God was small enough to understand, he wouldn't be large enough to worship. And as she's dying, as she's, you know, as I'm the one battling all the stuff, you know, and questioning and just didn't understand. And it was just a thing, you know, cause I could have, you know, turned to anything at 17 years old. Sure. Everybody's going to, you know, most people going to turn to alcohol or drugs or just run, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To cope with the unknowing and the pain. And I'm so thankful that I didn't, because again, in her last breath, she spoke that into my life and, which gave me for me to turn and go, okay, I don't have to know, but I just have to trust that you know why this is happening. And, you know, because the Bible says, you know, when I've prepared my place for you is the time that I will come bring you home. So I just kept going, okay, well, her mansion wasn't ready yet. Hurry up, carpenters.
What a force, though. I mean, for her to be, I can't even imagine what the rest of your life and exposure to her and that kind of a force of faith. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've become, ever since then, I've been a faith warrior. I mean, I'm really, you know, thankfully I'm not a fear-based person, because I guess I've had to rely only on Jesus for so many times and scenarios and throughout my life that I just go, I'm not going, Satan, you're not going to get me down here. You're not going to say, I already know all this. I already know your tricks. Nope, you're not doing it. So, I've always, just because I know it works and I know that God never leaves you. And, you know, he's closest to the brokenhearted. So I've been there a bunch. So he's been my answer through it all.
So were there people around you who were telling you, encouraging you that your voice was a gift? Did you always believe that?
You know, I always thought that I could sing, you know, I never really thought it was a gift. I was just kind of like, oh, I think I sound like that dude on the radio, or, you know, I could, whoever, you know, I could sound like those people, you know, but then as I got older, cause I was really into sports. So I wasn't really like pursuing music, cause I was, you know, I was kind of an athlete. So I just really was focused on that. But I always loved to sing. And I mean, and I still to this day just walk around singing like, like I don't do it for a living. You know, I just, I'm just always singing something. So the first song I ever learned word for word was the old Rugged Cross. And my grandpa would play it and all that. But I guess when I was like getting into high school and stuff, like I would do, you know, not only was I playing sports, but I'd do show choir. And then I would do, you know, concert choir. And then I started getting like, you know, I'd get all the solos and then I'd start winning like best tenor award. And I was like, you know, maybe there is something, I don't know. But then I was singing karaoke stuff and then I was doing that. And then I was kind of like, okay, well, yeah, I could tell that I could sing some things better than some people. But that night in my mom's kitchen, it was just, it was as clear a vision, Mary, as I've ever, it was like, I mean, automatically it was like the Holy Spirit. The words just came out of my mouth. I was like, I said, God, I feel like you've given me a gift and I am so sorry. I knew in that moment that that's what you called me to do. This is the purpose and plan that you've had for my life. And I'm so sorry that I didn't even recognize it, or one reason or another, I don't know, but I know this is what you called me to do.
Let me ask you a little bit of before that. I mean, did you feel like he was pointing that out to you prior and you had been going, nah, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah, because so when I graduated high school, so I worked for the board of mentally retarded, developmentally disabled adults for 10 years. That's what I was doing.
Wow. From the time you graduated high school, that's what you had done?
Till I was 28, yep.
So you're in a career. You weren't just like doing odd jobs. You were in a career. You were on a path. Okay.
Yeah, I was on a path. It's, you know, and I knew that was my calling. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was, and because I learned so much about people and how to talk to people and the hearts of people and all of that. But it was just time for a new season, I guess. But yeah, that's what I did up until February of 98. And so, you know, I worked for the state office tower. So, I mean, I was like, let's see, I can retire
right
when I'm 48.
Right.
I've got all the insurance and all the benefits. And so I'm going to just, because I knew when I put my 2-week leave of absence in that I was not going to come back.
So you didn't.
And it was just.
I'm sorry. You didn't quit. You just said, I'm going to take a little time off.
Yeah. I said, I'm going to put my 2-week leave of absence in. And I was like, but I'm still competitive. I'm like, there ain't no way I'm coming back. There's no way I can come back and go, well, it didn't work out. I can't do it. I'm just not built that way. You know, if I got to go to work for Chick-fil-A in Nashville, that's where I'm going to be. So I knew in my heart, I knew the moment that God and I spent in that kitchen that I knew that it was going to work out. I knew it had to.
That's crazy.
It wasn't me doing it. It was him doing it.
Can you tell me a little bit about like what led up to that? Was that, were you by yourself, by the way, or was somebody else there speaking to you?
Can
you tell me a little bit?
I was all
about,
by myself.
Okay. Had you been experiencing like a restlessness in your heart?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, kind of. It was just kind of starting to grow and kind of like, you know, gosh, I don't know what it is, but it's like, I'm more like I could here's what I would do. I would get off work and like, I'd go to these bars like that would have karaoke. So if you won, I mean, that was $100. So if I hit 2 or 3 of those on Friday and 2 or 3 on Saturday, you know, I mean, I could be $700 as you know what I mean?
Wow.
So I'd go in there and get the karaoke book, put my name on the thing and they'd call it up and I'd be in there singing Boys to Men. I'm down on bended knee, life's handy, you know? So I'd go in there and then it was just like, gosh, it's so much fun. I mean, I just love it. So I was kind of getting that bug, you know, and kind of going, all right. And then it was like getting harder to go to work because I would rather be doing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, yeah.
But that's just kind of where it was. And then it was just, I was just at my mom's house and listening to the radio. I'll never forget the song. It was Brian White's song called Someone Else's Star.
Huh.
And isn't it funny, the lyric, though? Because the lyric of that chorus was, I guess I must be wishing on someone else's star. Obviously, the star I was wishing on was the one God had put up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
So, and just in that moment, it just all of a sudden you had a clarity that you hadn't had before.
Crystal clear. I mean, I heard the nudging of the Holy Spirit was just like, oh. I mean, I just immediately looked up and said, Father, I'm so sorry. I know that you've given me a gift and I'm just so sorry that I haven't used it. I don't even know where the words came from. It was just like, all right, I'm going to Nashville. I know exactly what I'm supposed to do. I'm going.
And did you have a conviction right away that it was going to work out? Did you have any idea what was ahead of you?
No, okay. Not a clue. You know, Jay, my cousin, he lived here already. He, you know, cause he had that, you know, east to west and
yeah.
He was working with Michael English and stuff at that time. And Jay was like, man, yeah. He said, you can come in, stay on my. So I slept on his couch in a one bedroom. And I just, you know, when I got to town, it was the same thing as Ohio, but it was like karaoke, but you're playing with live bands instead of like the tracks. So I would just go to these honky tonks, put my name up there. you know, try to do Randy Travis songs. What, at halftime, I didn't even get caught up. I'm like, well, daggone it, this is horrible.
Did you ever think, well, this was a mistake, I'm going back home?
A bunch of times I would call them. There's times where I was like, Mom, I don't think it's going to work out. I know God's called me here, but I don't know if I can, you know, the lights are getting turned off, the water's getting turned off.
Oh, my.
You know, can you go to the credit union and get me another loan? You know, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Help mm-hmm. me out with bills. And, you know, but I knew that I couldn't go. I was not going to be defeated, because I knew that this is what God called me to do. So going back home wasn't in the cards, that's for sure.
So how did it play out? How long was it before you saw something like in the natural that was confirming what you were experiencing in the supernatural?
So I met a country artist back then. Her name was Myla Mason. And I was singing at this honky tonk called the Fiddle and Steel Guitar Bar, where we mm-hmm. ended up getting our start.
Yeah.
But I was singing in there, and she was in there for some reason. And she came up and she said, "Hey, my name's Myla Mason." And I was like, "Yeah, I know who you are." I was like, "Oh my gosh." She's like, "Well, I think you're phenomenal." She said, "I'd love to help you any way that I could." And I was like, "Awesome." So she gave me her number. I called her, and we started going around to publishers and looking for songs and all that kind of stuff. Then I was like, okay, now there's something, somebody's internet. Now I can see what's happening. And then literally we started, you know, started building a fan base at the Fiddle and Steel. And I had met who our producers were at the first record, Mark Bright and Marty Williams. And that's just kind of where it started. So I moved to town February '98, and we got signed January of '99.
Wow.
And then then we went on the radio tour, and then our first record came out June 6th of 2000. And
wow.
Yeah. So it sure felt a lot longer. I can tell you that. It sure felt a lot longer than that.
I'm sure it did, especially if the utilities are getting cut.
Oh,
that's
horrible.
A long, dark night.
Oh, I know. And I'm so glad that Michael Ingres lived across the street, because I'd go over there and I'd go, "Hey, bud, man, lights are off." And he was like, "Well, come on." He'd be in there making butter beans or something. You know, he wasn't rolling in the dough either. So,
was that like one of your first gigs, was singing backup for Michael Ingres? Is that right?
Yeah, in town. Yeah, sure was. Sing backup for him. And we went on the road, and it was that was the first gig.
So, I mean, Rascal Flatts, you didn't just make it one of the biggest country bands ever. I mean, it's just astounding. And I'm guessing you were probably astounded along the way too. Do you remember moments when you were like, "That's got to be a God thing. Only God could make this X, Y, or Z, whatever happened." Do you remember moments along the way?
Yeah, just about all of them. Like, you know, it's like Praying for Daylight went number one. That was our first single. Then we had two or three other singles. This Everyday Love, and then Wow, You Loved Me, I think. So we had three singles off the first record, and we were going to be done. We were already starting to work on the next record, you know?
Wow.
So we had a song on there called I'm Moving On. It was never slotted to be a single. We were already, you know, moving forward to cut the next record. Well, the program director and here in Nashville, and the DJ Jerry House, his wife said, "Hey, will you play that Rascal Flatts song for me this morning on the radio?" And he was like, "Yeah." So she wanted him to play I'm Moving On. So Jerry House played I'm Moving On that morning. Nobody knew. We didn't know. He just did it for his wife. And he was like, "Hey, this is a song by Rascal Flatts." Told the story and said, "Here it is, but I'm Moving On." So he played it, and the phones blew up. And the first phone call was a guy that was on his way to commit suicide and heard that song, pulled over crying in tears, and called the radio station. And it was calls like that all day long.
Wow.
So a song that we weren't even going to release or whatever, if it wasn't for Jerry House, probably, but it was a complete God thing, you mm-hmm. know, that's mm-hmm. all it was.
And I'm sure you've seen God orchestrate things all throughout your career that, you know.
Oh, yeah. All throughout our career. I mean, just, you know, because it all starts with and ends with a great song. And that's where you see God show up so many times in our career, because He gave us so many that were songs with meaning. You know, it wasn't cold beer and tailgates all, you know what
yes,
I mean? It
yeah.
was My Wish and songs like Skin and, you know, just songs that have, you know, God Bless the Broken Road.
Right.
That's another story.
I'd love to hear that story.
Yeah. You won't even believe it, but God Bless the Broken Road laid around Nashville for 11 years before we cut it.
I've read that somewhere and I thought, That just seems unbelievable because several people picked it up and thought about it, but never happened.
Never did it. You know, it was just the time, I guess. You know, sometimes the songs find you, and God was like, okay, here, guys, mm-hmm. go do this for me. And so, you know, that was another one of those things. So he just kept blessing us with, I mean, not just good songs, but monumental, I mean, songs that'll last forever, you know? Yeah, the whole thing's kind of been a fairy. I still pinch myself like, what? You know, like August 25th, the Academy of Country Music giving us the Icon Award. It's like, Icon Award? Are you kidding me? Can't even, you know, and all the places that we played, you know, like we're the first country act to ever play Wrigley Field and sell it out. You know, just all of the, I don't know. God does everything big. That's all I know.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that I love about your story is that you not only have an amazing voice, it's a uniquely amazing voice. I mean, I think that's the way fans feel about it. Super mm-hmm. recognizable, and God gifted you for that. And most of us don't have a voice like that, but we've got something. God's got something that he's, you know, gifted us to do. And mm-hmm. so one of the things I love about your story is that you came to that place and you took a leap of faith and you've seen God just do amazing things. And I think part of that is that's inspiring to whoever's listening today, whatever that thing is that God's been nudging them. And I'm hoping that as they're listening, that God's pointing out to them, remember this? This is the thing I've been saying to you. This is what you're called to mm-hmm. do. This is what you're gifted to do. And it's one of the things I love about
your story. And it's not living a life of what if, and, you know, and no matter what it is, you know, God, he's never going to leave you, you know, mm-hmm. if it works or if it doesn't, but he's got an absolute unique purpose and plan for every single person that he's ever created. I mean, everybody has some sort of divine calling in some way, because he loves us that much. And he's called us all in one way, form or fashion for something great.
I love that. It's kind of full circle. Like when you started out singing backup for Michael English, and now you've had this amazing career, and then COVID comes, I assume that shuts everything down, and now you've got an opportunity to do something. I've read you've said many times, this is something you've thought about doing for a long time. Can you talk about this EP that you've released?
Yep. So I've always wanted to do a Christian gospel EP, always. But I mean, literally, we have been on tour and trying to, you know, our Rascal Flatts album deadlines. I mean, there was no way to even, I couldn't do it. I just didn't have the time to do it. And, you know, COVID was unfortunate, but it really gave me the time to do it. So I just took all of the downtime, and it was like, you know what? Now's the time. I know there was another God moment where I was like, okay, here we go. I know what I'm supposed to do. So it's the album's called One on One. And so I've got a duet that I did with that Mercy Me.
Yes.
Is on.
It's a great song.
Thank you. And there's a song I did with my daughter, Brittany. That was called While I Wait. And then my good friend, Jonathan McReynolds, him and I did a duet on there with a song that he wrote. And then Breland, you know, the country singer, who's actually a pastor's kid, who's just amazing talent. Holy cow. We wrote that song called All I See. It goes, help me focus my eyes, Lord, till you're all I see. And it was just about just getting off track so many times in life. And we just have to go, Lord, help me focus my eyes again back to the only thing that's important in life. And that's you. So we wrote that in 20 minutes.
Wow. How often does that happen?
Yeah, it is pretty rare. There's a lot of them that you write in 20 minutes that'll never be heard because they're horrible. So it's pretty interesting when you write one in 20 minutes that actually works. You're like, oh, it is good.
That is. Okay. That's actually turned out all right.
Yeah, that's neat. All right. It's high five, everybody around the room. Let's go. Woo-hoo. Yeah, so it's nice to have one you can actually, that somebody else will hear that you write in 20 minutes instead of just you going, oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Are you going to be out on the road? Are you going to be sharing these songs? What's ahead for you this year?
Yep. We are. I actually just got back from Vail, Colorado, and did my first show out there. And then I start my fall tour in September, and I'll go up until Thanksgiving, and then next year, big tour. And yep. So I'll be doing all the Rascal Flatts hits. I'll be doing, fine. You know, all the stuff off my One on One album. And then next year I got another solo country record coming out. And then probably first quarter. And then I'm going to try to drop another Christian EP next year during the fall.
Wow. We got a lot to mm-hmm. look forward to.
You know, and all these trying times and the unknown of what's going on in this crazy world, all of that is just, we know that God is still fully in control of our lives, and we cannot, let's not buckle down to, and just pray that all the shackles of fear be broken off of everybody. And just know that if you keep God still in the center of your life, that everything's going to work out. Everything will work out. And, you know, he doesn't add or subtract his love for us on our failures or all the great stuff that we do. It's unconditional. And, you know, no matter what speed bump or crack or detour that we hit in life, you know, as long as we just continue to know that, you know, life is so much easier when God's in control, because we sure screw it up whenever we try to take the reins. So
amen,
once we give it to him, let's just let him have it, because it never works out once we take the reins back.
Gary's gospel EP, it's called One on One, and you can find out about that and when he'll be in concert near you on his website, GaryLavox.com. Thanks to Gary for being a part of our 100th episode of The Unfolding. We're going to be right back with more stories in this special episode, but first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute.
Hi, I'm Habib Habib. As a younger person, I would have never imagined that I was tough enough to handle the challenges that life threw at me. But I was wrong. By the grace of God, I managed through all of it. That taught me a lesson that we are stronger than we think and able to handle more than we think. Brianna Weiss said, "One day, the mountain that's in front of you will be so far behind you, it will barely be visible in the distance. But the person you have become in learning to get over it, that will stay with you forever." And that's the point of the mountain. 2 Timothy 1 says that God gives us a spirit of power. In looking back at my life, me, a timid teenager who was afraid of his own tail, I can testify that that verse is true. You never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice you have. Just then, God gives you the spirit of power to be resilient and to get through the difficult times. My prayer for you is that you believe it too. Read more at HabibHabib.com.
Hey, as we're celebrating the milestone of page 100, we thought one of the best ways we could do that would be to share your story. How has God used The Unfolding in your life?
When I'm listening to it, I picture the story they're telling and to sit in awe of how they have either kept their faith or have found Jesus during their chaos and their trying times. Gracia telling her story of her and Martin when they were the missionaries, that one sticks out a lot in my head, that how they can go through what they went through and what she, you know, in particular what she went through, and to keep holding on to that faith. And then what he said about let's serve the Lord with gladness from the Psalms 100, that they can go through what they've gone through and keep their faith. And then it reminds me to keep my own faith when I'm going through my rough times. And I've had a few recently. My dad passed away in May, and so it just reminds me that God's got it. I keep hearing the word trust all the time. That's a word, audible word I hear come through a lot.
Hey, I'm Tina Zimmerman, and I'm actually page 3 of The Unfolding, but I want to share with you how pages 81 and 91 came together literally to affect my life in a very visual way. I first listened to the podcast about Kyle Swanson and his incredible military career, and how in very desperate and dangerous situations, God came through and answered prayer exceedingly and abundantly more than he could ever have asked for. And he also shared that the word testimony has a root word in the Hebrew language, which is edut, which actually means repeat or do it again. And he explained that when we open our mouth and testify of the goodness of God and how he's been faithful and the things that he's done, that God will step up and do it again or repeat that. And I just thought that was such a powerful thing to keep in my mind. So I looked up that Hebrew word testimony, and it's a cool little symbol. It's like a T and a Y with two little dots underneath of it. And I just kind of offhandedly made the statement that, boy, if you were a person who got tattoos, that'd be a pretty cool little tattoo to have, to just remind you that what God has done in the past, he will do it again. Now, mind you, I am not a person who gets tattoos. I'm 55 years old. And at this age, sometimes your skin goes a complete different direction than your actual body. And so I had no intentions of being the canvas for a tattoo. However, Gary Miracle, who is also in the Unfolding, is a good friend of mine. I trained a service dog for him, and I have traveled back and forth to his home repeatedly to further the training and work with him and his service dog. And so one day we were discussing how God has been good, and I told him about that story of Kyle Swanson and showed him the little emblem, the image of the word testimony in Hebrew. And wouldn't you know it, the next thing I know, he's on the phone making me a tattoo appointment. And he drove me there. And yes, I actually got the symbol for testimony in Hebrew on my wrist. And so now, every time I start to wonder about the future or worry or become anxious, I don't know why. Why when we know we have such a good God who's always faithful, why do we think he won't repeat it? Why wouldn't he do it again? And so for me, this very visual symbol on my wrist just helps me focus and remember Kyle's story and remember Gary Miracle's story about how faithful he is. And that is why I love the Unfolding podcast, because they're not just interesting stories that we hear and think, oh, that was nice. No, each one is the story of a person who persevered or moved forward or pressed on and changed their own life. And they're just normal people like you and me. And so it's a reminder that we can do the same thing. God will do it again. We just need to trust him, and he will repeat it, and he will do it again.
So we got pregnant right away. It was perfect. You wouldn't even know I was pregnant. I was not sick. I had seen my nurse every time we went to the doctor. Everything was great. And then we went in for our 20-week ultrasound to kind of take a look at the baby, find out the gender, which I was so excited about.
Were you going to find out the gender?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
So cool.
I was like, it's a boy. I know it's a boy. I don't even need them to confirm because I know it's a boy. So we went in. Our baby wouldn't move the certain way. He was flipped, not in the best way to find out gender. But we were down in the ultrasound for about 15 minutes. And I was like, why didn't they? Because they said it would take an hour. Why wouldn't they take more time? You know, I was frustrated because I was dead set on finding out that I was right. So we walk upstairs and we wait and we wait and we wait for our, you know, appointment afterwards. And we finally get called back. And I'm like super excited because the tech said we'd come back in a week, you know, all that. So first time meeting my doctor, she was like, hi, I'm, you know, your doctor so-and-so, blah, blah. Sits down, looks at us, and she's like, let's talk about your ultrasound. And it was like, what is going on?
Like the mood changed?
Yes. As soon as she walked in, it was just gloomy.
Huh.
Yeah. So she's like, so your baby has a condition called high drops. And basically, it's just a fluid buildup in their body that they can't process out. And he also has, or, you know, the baby, because we didn't know the gender yet, has like cleft hands and feet. Yeah, these babies don't make it to 30 weeks. I was like, what are you talking about? They're like, these babies just don't live.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, I'm so sorry. You know, of course we're crying because we would have never imagined to go in there and find out that we weren't going to have a baby. It was very just short and cold. Mm. And I was like, how dare you come in here and tell me that my baby's going to die? It was, your baby's going to die before 30 weeks. Let's go downstairs and get you some counseling. What? How can you be so cold about that and so nonchalant? Like, it almost felt like it wasn't even real. I was just like, she's lying to me. So we go downstairs to the genetic counselor, and he goes into more depth, like, what's the issues with him? And he's like, it's a chromosomal abnormality, you know, blah, blah, blah. A bunch of doctor talk that we don't understand. He's trying to dumb it down, but we're just hearing your baby's going to die.
Overwhelmed, I'm sure.
So he's like, you know, you can do like a needle in the belly to get some of the fluid to test exactly what it is. He's like, but there's a chance that that could stress the baby out and it'll die right then. I was like, well, then I'm not doing that. He's like, and then you also, you know, you have the choice to terminate the pregnancy. I said, don't even ask me to do that again because I've already said I'm not doing that. He is my baby. I'm not doing it. He's like, okay. And I'm like, so we just go home and wait? He's like, yeah. So we have to make that walk out of the hospital and go to our car. You know, everybody's expecting a phone call to know what the gender is and how the baby is. And so I had to make the call to my mom and my sister, and we put them like on a three-way call. And I just was like, our baby's going to die. You know, they said he's not going to make it. I always grew up knowing the love of God. Like, you kind of have your parents' relationship with God. We'd grown up going to church and all that, but he wasn't like huge in my life. I knew he was there. I knew he loved me. I know he does amazing things, but it wasn't like a huge part of my life. So then at this point, I wasn't really considering my relationship with God. And then my sister and my mom were like, we're going to church tonight and we're going to get some prayer. I was like, I don't really want to, but okay. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if I have to go and I cry in front of everybody, that's fine. So we go, and the speaker is actually talking about pregnancy loss. And she's talking about how her mom had lost a baby, you know, and what that did in their life, and how she actually lost a baby, and, you know, all that. So then they start praying for everyone. And of course, I'm bawling because what she's right. talking about pregnancy loss, and I just found out that my baby probably won't make it. So that was like, okay, God's here. God, this is God's plan. There's a reason that this is happening. You know, he's not here with us. He knows what's going on, because otherwise, how would we go to a random church service, you know, and they're talking about what I'm going through?
So did it like buoy your faith that like God yes. was going to do something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we went up and I got prayer, and then I was like, okay, that's a sign, you know, he's going to fix my baby. So there was a part of me that was like, all right, he's going to fix my baby. And there was also a very hateful part to me. That appointment was on November 1st. So we spent the next, you know, week just praying and praying and praying. I'm crying all the time. And I'm like, God, you are doing something. You have to do something. So the next day after my appointment, me and my husband went to town to just, you know, have some time to ourselves. That whole day, the baby was moving. We didn't know the gender yet still, but he was moving the entire day. We were sitting in, I think, the Target parking lot. I was listening to the radio, and that song, God's Not Done With You, came in.
Oh, wow.
And he was moving. He wasn't moving. And then that song came on and he was moving. And I was like, this is another sign. Okay. God is not done with this baby. There's no way this is going to happen. You know?
So your faith is just getting higher and higher and higher.
Oh yeah. I was like, I am not losing this baby. You know, of course I'm still upset and I'm crying all the time. And I'm like, pray for me because I'm not doing good. Mm-hmm. You know? A lot of my siblings went in and got us a peek at me ultrasound.
What is that?
So it's like a 3D, 4D ultrasound. You go in for a little, like 30 minutes or something, and they go in and get like 3D, 4D pictures and, you know, stuff like that. It's outside of the hospital. So,
okay.
Yeah. We go in and it was like a snowstorm. And I took me, my husband, my sister, my mom, and my mother-in-law. Because at this point, we didn't really get good pictures of him from the ultrasounds. So it was a snowstorm and they were like, maybe we should reschedule. I'm like, no. Like, we're not doing this. If he's going to die, I have to have something of him. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to have the heartbeat animal. I have to have, you know, the pictures that I was never going to get if he did. So then we went to the ultrasound and it was very quick that I noticed. The tech hadn't said anything yet. And I said, there's no heartbeat, is there? And she's like,
Oh.
No, there's not. And I just lose it. In my heart, I kind of knew that he wasn't going to be there. But I still had hope that I would be wrong. Mm-hmm. The doctors would be wrong. So the tech was like, I'm so sorry. This has never happened to me here. And I said, it's okay. I said, she said, it seems like, you know, he's got some buildup of fluid. I said, I know. I said, they told us that he did. And that's why we're here. She's like, can I do anything else for you? I said, can you please confirm the gender? I said, they didn't tell us. And she's like, it's a boy. So that was even harder because it's like, I knew that was my son. So the next morning I called my doctor and I was like, I went and got a 4D ultrasound last night. They told me my baby didn't have a heartbeat. I just don't know what to do now. So my doctor calls me and she's like, we come in an hour and we'll go over options. I'm like, okay. So we had to go in, do another ultrasound to confirm. We went upstairs to talk to my doctor and she's like, so there's a couple different options. You can get induced and deliver him, or you can have a DNC. So we got sent over to labor and delivery and I got hooked up to be induced.
How did you feel about God at that point?
Oh my gosh, I was so angry. I was like, how dare you? Basically, I was like, I cannot believe that you gave me this much faith for you to not save my baby. I was like, who does that? I was still faithful at this point. There wasn't much time to think about it, you know, but I was angry, but I was still faithful. So it was about 24 hours before we had him.
So you leave the hospital. I'm curious about what happened with your faith after you went through
it. It went down. Mm-hmm. I was like I said, I was full of hate. I never really had a great relationship with my earthly father. So I was like, now my godly father just ruined me. I was like, I don't even know if I believe in this anymore. He gave me this much hope and then he just took it away. I was like, who does that to a daughter? So I actually told my mom and sister, I was like, I think Christians just tell themselves these things to make their lives feel better, because there is no way that someone that is supposed to love you so much would do this to me. And at this point, I had never lost anybody. You know, my grandparents were still alive. You know, I never lost anybody. I was angry. And I was like, at this point, I could still say thank you for the 21 weeks we had with him. And that's all I could say. I just feel horrible. I don't want anything to do with him because he obviously doesn't care. Because if he did, he would have saved him. I went, you know, days. Like, I just hate the world. Then my little brother came to me. Like a week after having him, he was like, I have to tell you something. And you could just tell he was uncomfortable. He didn't want to be there telling me this. And I was like, she's pregnant, isn't she? And he's like, yeah. And I'm just like,
did that feel like salt in a wound?
Oh my gosh, yes. You know, and it's the fact that he was my younger brother. They weren't married. And I was just like, I literally said, I hope you're good parents.
That was all you could muster, huh?
Yeah, I was like, okay. And I forgot to mention that one of my siblings were already expecting. So the day I had Bennett, it was the day of their first prenatal appointment. So she was 10 weeks pregnant. So we kind of just went on about our lives. And at this point, it was Thanksgiving time. And we had a dinner and all that. And another sibling came up to me and was like, I'm so sorry. I have to tell you this, but we want you to know first. And so they're expecting, of course, like, I'm to, you know, don't feel bad because your lives are moving on. You're growing your family, you know. Then another one, you know, was like, oh, since they announced, hey, we are too.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Like, I am going to lose it. What is with all the babies happening? I was just like trying to be pleasant, but also in my heart, I am like, I cannot do this.
And now you're walking through the hardest thing ever. And you don't have a God to rely on.
Yeah, I would cry at night. And my husband was like, what is wrong? I said, I'm losing my faith and I'm scared. You know, it's a scary thing to have that to hold on to for your whole life and then be like, I don't think I believe in that. You know, so where do you go from there? It's kind of like you're just existing. There's nothing to look forward to. There's nothing. So I went through just hate. I couldn't stand anybody. My family were like, you are you attacked everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, considering what I've been through and how many people have come out as they are getting, you know, having a baby, you know, and on top of the people in my family. So I'm one of six and four out of, you know, those people were having babies. So after that, my family were like, you really need to do something because basically they said, no one wants to be around you. Brutally honest, but it needed to happen because I was just a mess, you know, and I feel bad for how I treated some people. But in my head, I was justified because what is wrong with everybody else? You know, why is it this timing that everybody has to do this? So I found the Unfolding podcast. And I binge listened to your podcast.
Really?
Every single day. It was on my phone 24/7.
Really?
I would go to sleep with it on. I would wake up. I would go to work on my computer and listen to it. And just really like, okay, if they can do it, if the people in these podcasts can do it, so can I. I was like, if they can find their way back, so can I. And there was a few episodes that were actually really similar to mine, you know, people losing their children. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if they can do it, so can I. So I went back to the, you know, we started with, thank you for the 21 weeks. You know, thank you for the 13 extra days I had with him from the time we found out he wasn't going to make it to the time I delivered him. You know, thank you for those days, because without those, we wouldn't have had the opportunity to go get more pictures of him and find out the gender, you know? So then it kind of just went from there. My aunt was real big into praying and, you know, praying for other people. And they're like, come in, we want to pray with you. And we basically want to help you forgive people and kind of set yourself free from some things. And I was like, I said no the first couple times. I was like, nope, don't want to do it. But I did end up going in. I had to forgive my dad, who I don't speak to. You know, he wasn't a very good dad. I had to forgive a couple of my siblings, and I had to forgive God for not saving my baby. And it's like, those are the hard, because before then, I will say I didn't forgive people because I didn't know how. I don't know how to forgive people. So forgiving those people really helped me with my relationship with God, because after that, I just felt like a weight had lifted off of me and I was kind of reconnected. Yeah. So through that and through the podcast that I binged every single day.
Do you remember any particular episode that was meaningful to you?
The ones with people losing their kids, really. I mean, I just bawled through the whole thing, but I'm like, if they can forgive and know in their heart that they are going to see their kids again, so can I. You know, that really helped me, because I'm like, I didn't know anybody who had lost a kid like we did to kind of connect with. And so I really connected with those. And, you know, every single episode was something to me. Every single one. There was a couple that I was like angry. I was like, how can you, you know, I'm happy for these people that they did reconnect with God. But at the same time, how can you do that? Because I want that kind of strength, because I don't have it right now. After I forgave him and realized that I'm going to see my son again, it was so much better. And living was so much better, because I was living to see something at the end. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just I'm living to die. Mm-hmm. I'm living to go to heaven, to get the answers I needed, and to see my son and feel the love of God, you know, like I never have before. So I'm not living just to die. I'm living for a reason. I had such a hard time trusting God before this, you know, with anything. I did have faith, but I didn't have that kind of faith. Like, I have to make things work. I have to make things happen. And now I am like, God's got us. I tell my husband all the time, if we're stressing out about it, I'm like, God's got us. Because you know what? He can do some serious things in our lives. There's no way he's going to let our power get shut off or my car break down or, you know, and not have a solution, you know? So I don't really worry about anything anymore. I'm just like, God's got us, which is crazy to think that I went from back to where I can't even talk to you right now to I don't really have a worry in the world because I know you're gonna help me.
A few months after Bennett was born, Madison and her husband found out they were expecting. Finley Grace, a beautiful little girl, was born December 22nd. Madison says she's the happiest baby ever. Thanks so much to Madison and Tina and Tanya for sharing their stories. Thank you for listening to this special episode of The Unfolding. If you've got a story, we would love to hear about it. Just head over to The Unfolding Podcast Facebook page. Well, there have been so many people who've helped to make the first 100 episodes of The Unfolding possible. Thanks to Jen Brisky and Danielle Perez for help with web stuff, to Elena Nowlin, who creates our graphics for social media. Thanks to Jonathan Eltervogt for editorial and social media help, Eric Nichols, Ryan Springer, and so many others who send great guest ideas. Zoe Fuller helps with our sponsorships, Pam Peoples and Lisa Williams for great advice and prayer. I need a lot of that. And Jeff Scott and Jason Sharp for letting us dream and try out this crazy idea of a podcast all about God's stories. Most of all, I am so grateful to Jason Rackow, our producer, but really he's so much more. Had it not been for his creative brain pouring fuel on the fire of this idea, The Unfolding never would have happened. And I'm pretty sure he's the one who came up with the name too. So thank you, Jason. And finally, we are super grateful to our kind and generous sponsor, Habib Habib, the founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. It's our privilege to partner with him in The Unfolding. You can learn more at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We're going to take a couple of weeks off before we launch the next 100 pages of The Unfolding. We'll be back September 10th with a special edition in honor of the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. It's an episode you will not want to miss.